This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. We're in an age where content is king, driven by the explosion of the internet and social media. The array of content available for consumption is mind-boggling across all forms of media. And similarly, it's never been easier to create content for a mass audience. So the question we're asking today is, what's the best way to regulate all this content? And can this even be done? I'm posing this question to the Executive Director of the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Content Forum, or CMCF, Madiha Mahmud, who joins me on the show today. Hi, Madiha. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Shazana. Happy to be here.
So I want to start with the basics, because I trust that I'm not the only one, or I hope I'm not the only one, who isn't familiar with the CMCF. I think what's more well known is the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commission, or MCMC. I think everybody knows that as the overall regulator for the communications and multimedia industry. So where does the CMCF come in, and what do you do?
Great. I think one of the first things I should probably mention is that we would like to call ourselves the Content Forum from now on, so it would lead to less confusion with MCMC. And I can also tell you that it is self-explanatory in the name, and I'll just let you know in a bit how. Mm-hmm. Before I get to your question, Shazana, which is a good one, we all know that in today's day and age, everybody has access to content at their fingertips. And this makes content dissemination a lot easier, but content regulation a lot more challenging. Mm. So in order to ensure all these forms of content are safe to be consumed for the audience it is intended for, self-regulation is pivotal, and that's where we come in as the Content Forum. We are designated under the Communications and Multimedia Act 1998, which is like a blueprint for the industry. It fosters self-regulation within the industry amongst its players. The Content Forum is formed under MCMC, but it should always be noted that the Content Forum is an independent industry self-regulatory body. We comprise of members of the industry from six categories, including broadcasters, advertisers, content creators, audio text hosting service providers, internet service providers, and the like. So the Content Forum, in a nutshell, we basically regulate ourselves through a content code, which was created by the industry players and first registered with MCMC in 2004. And the main objective of the content code is to advocate self-regulation within the industry, while at the same time encouraging the development of content and the industry as a whole.
I want to jump on this term self-regulation. Mm. I mean, it sounds like a pretty useful concept in that it calls right. upon the industry to set up a body and determine the rules under which it operates, rather than relying on, I suppose, the government to do so. But
that's right.
How do you sell this idea to the public? How do we know that this body, the Content Forum, is acting with public interest in mind rather than the interest of the industry players?
That's a very good question. So what it is in the Content Forum is that we make sure there is a balance with the industry as well as public interest and national interest as well. An example that I can give you is that one of the members or the category of members in the Content Forum are civic groups. And in any decision that we make and in any of the working groups that drafts the code or guidelines, a civic group representative needs to be there. It's compulsory for them to be in attendance. So it does keep the industry in check.
Okay, so you're saying that you have, I guess, different stakeholders with different perspectives, all part of this table in order
That's
to
correct.
Determine how content in the industry is regulated. Can we, before we dive into, I guess, the content code, I just mm-hmm. want to say, who are the stakeholders in the Content Forum? You mentioned a few. You mentioned advertisers, audio tech service providers. Does it involve online content creators? I mean, how broad does this scope cover?
It's as broad as the members who join us. So if we have content creators in the forms of production houses who join us, then they're there as well. They're represented. The Content Forum is based on membership.
Are social media platforms part of your forum?
They're not members yet, no.
Mm-hmm. But they could be? Mm-hmm.
They could be. We welcome them. It would be great if they were.
Are news portals part of the forum?
Online news portals.
Yes.
They can be, but again, I don't believe there are any at the moment.
Okay. So it hasn't, yeah. I suppose the Content Forum hasn't tried to bring these groups in
oh,
either.
Oh, no, we have tried. We try, but I think what the issue is here, that they may have a preconceived idea of what the content forum is. I mean, if they've never heard of us, that's one problem. But if they've heard of us and they think that we're just yet another body or agency that seeks to regulate them, they might not want to be your members. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of preconceived idea that we need to address. And we understand we need to address that. Mm-hmm. Online portals, news portals, social media platforms, we'd love to have them in because we believe that they would provide great input for self-regulation purposes as well. And we would like to streamline and standardize the way we do things, especially in terms of best practices. Mm-hmm. But I suppose, you know, to look into ourselves, we need to be able to speak with them and assure them that being a member of the Content Forum is very much an added value for them as well. Mm. And it's not just another way or another platform for us or for people to censor or regulate entirely. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the content code, which you mentioned. And if I'm not mistaken, it was launched back in 2004. Maybe you can walk us through what the guidelines under this content code are.
Sure. The content code, I would like to add at this juncture, we are currently revamping it because, as you mentioned, it was first drafted back in 2004. And during that time, we didn't envision the kind of technological developments that we see now. Mm. So the content code, as it is, has several chapters in there, which deals with categories of content from broadcasting to advertising and even online. And it addresses issues from women in advertising, about advertising directed to children, content that is suitable for adults, content that needs to be censored or regulated for minors. So it ranges across these issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who is bound by this code? Is it just CMCF members or does it apply to the industry overall? And does the CMCF have any teeth to enforce this?
Good question again. The ones who are bound by the content code are their members, our members, as well as licensees under the under MCMC. Mm-hmm. Licensees meaning like all the broadcasters, they need a license to broadcast. So they are part of their license condition is to be part of the content forum. And they've been very, very active and very active participants in the forum.
Mm-hmm. So if apart from that, if you're not a member, then you're not bound by this content code. If you're not licensed,
unless you voluntarily bind yourself. For example, if there is a complaint against you as a non-member by a member of the content forum, and they want us, the content forum, to help resolve this dispute some way, what we do is we approach the non-member and say, "Would you like to be part of this dispute resolution process under the content forum?" And if they say, "Yeah," then we do with them as we would to any other member, and do the whole complaints process or advisory processes with them. Mm-hmm. And again, it's voluntary. Yeah,
voluntary. And do you have any teeth? Is there, what kind of penalties can the content forum impose on those who have been found violating the content code?
Yes, the content forum does have a bit of teeth. We have sanctions in the content code. So what the bureau, or that's what we call our complaints bureau, can do is either issue the person or the organization a written reprimand, or impose a fine not exceeding 50,000 ringgit, or require the removal of the content or cessation of the offending act.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to Madiha Mahmud, the Executive Director of the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Content Forum, a self-regulatory body for the media and communications industry. When we come back, we'll talk about the challenges that the Content Forum faces in regulating content in the digital age. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Hello, if you've just joined us, I'm Shazana, and this is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. With me on the show today is Madiha Mahmud, the Executive Director of the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Content Forum, also known as the Content Forum. We're discussing the self-regulation of content and what this looks like in today's increasingly digitalized media landscape. Let us talk about, I guess, what are the challenges that you see for the Content Forum? You were appointed as executive director just 4 months ago, but you have been involved in the forum in the past in other parts of your career. You've seen how this content code and how the Content Forum operates. Does your view of the situation change based on the hat that you're now wearing, if that question makes sense? You know, I mean, you may have seen it one way from the industry mm-hmm. perspective, but now that you're on the other side of the table, what are some of the observations that you're seeing?
I think when I was previously on the Content Forum Council, I was in the capacity as one of the members. And I guess the biggest difference that I see now that I am actually leading this organization is that there's so much potential that's left untapped, which I do hope that we can explore because of the fact that our members are captains of each other's industries or their own industries. And they have so much that they can offer to the forum and so much that we can offer to them as well. So I think the biggest challenge is, like I said earlier, to deal with the preconceived notion that self-regulation is a bad thing. It really isn't. And that's one of the things that we will seek to do to present it as such, not just to the industry, but also to content consumers and everyone else involved.
Can you, let's walk through that idea. How does self-regulation benefit the consumer? If I'm a consumer and self-regulation is supposed to be a good model for me, what do I gain?
In a nutshell, self-regulation is designed to promote transparency, ensure accountability and legitimacy within the industry. Mm-hmm. And because self-regulation by way of the Content Forum involves the holistic participation of various stakeholders, it benefits the end user in the end. For example, I think before we get into that, we should also look at what self-regulation is all about, because I think a lot of people might confuse it with censorship. And there is a little bit of a difference there in the sense that, in my opinion, it overlaps. Mm. Because when you talk about self-censorship, you talk about making sure that you control what you say or what you do in order to avoid annoying or offending others, right? And it's usually driven by the fear or the reluctance to cause negative impact on others. But self-regulation is the act of making certain that you act accordingly to a set of rules like the content code. And it governs specific instances of what you say or to whom and where and when and how. So translating it into the consumer's side, those who consume content, when I was working in the broadcasting industry, mm-hmm. we used to have complaints from people who said that we censored too much. But at the same time, you also receive complaints by people who said we didn't censor enough. So it was really tough to find that balance, and self-regulation helps that. I can give you an illustration.
Yes, please.
If you like watching horror movies, and horror movies, you have to understand, is an industry of its own. You've got talented people doing makeup for all the gore and the blood and stuff. We've got people who do the effects and stuff like that. So it is an industry that's catered for people who want to watch horror movies. But you have people who should not be able to access such horror movies, like children, for example. You have people, for example, like me, who can't stand horror movies, who don't want to watch it. So what self-regulation does is it allows fans of horror movies to continue having access to such content, while ensuring that people like me are equipped with the knowledge of what that content is by way of classifications, by way of the electronic programming guide, things like that. And then another part of self-regulation are parents who then have the instruments like parental lock to make sure that their children don't get to access such content. So when you have self-regulation, you allow content to be accessed by those who it's intended for and those who want to consume it, while at the same time, regulating it or blocking it from people who shouldn't be accessing such content.
Okay, that's a pretty clear example of how self-regulation works. And that comes from a broadcasting context. But how do you apply self-regulation when it comes to the wild, wild web? You know, what are the challenges that you see regulating online content? I mean, that's something that everyone is kind of grappling with, this issue at the moment.
Yes, and you're right. The thing is, we also need to acknowledge that the online environment differs vastly from the other existing traditional mediums when it comes to content dissemination. And it has been proven time and again to be a very complex and challenging one because, you know, online users don't just digest material that's on there. They are also allowed to contribute to online content by virtue of user-generated content and all that. Hmm. But I think the biggest challenge for regulating online content is that idea that people have that there should be no regulation of online content, that there should be total freedom of the internet. And I get it. It's a fantastic concept, but it fails to take into account the reality of living in a world with human beings and our varied weaknesses and evil inclinations. These not so nice people who exist offline in real life do exist online, and the social problems that we face offline takes a virtual form online. For example, there's cyberbullying, there's fake news, trolls who create nasty and ridiculous nonsense about COVID-19 and its vaccines, online sexual harassment against women, grooming of children by pedophiles, doxing and defamation by those hiding behind anonymity. So digital or online content still requires regulation because of these issues. So what I'm trying to say is that online content providers and consumers must be equally ready and equipped with self-regulation tools to enjoy the freedom they're getting from creating and consuming online content while ensuring that the online environment remains to be a safe one. So the self-regulatory framework that I mentioned earlier about, you know, broadcasters and the traditional forms of content apply just as much on the online platforms as well. And we see that happening. We see websites or certain platforms allowing or providing access to parental tools, for example, or providing disclaimers or warnings that such content that they're about to show may not be suitable for certain groups of people. Things like that. Those are self-regulatory tools. And the more we all buy into the idea that the online environment needs to be made as safe as the offline environment, then the better self-regulation will flourish.
How would you compare our self-regulatory body with, I guess, international peers? You know, like, what other country are we modeling ourselves against when it comes to self-regulation of content?
There's a lot of self-regulatory organizations around the world, and we are pleased to be networking with them and working with them. Especially, I can give you an example of throughout our content code revamp exercise, we've done a lot of benchmarking against these countries. And I think to answer your question, the difference or the biggest challenge for us is the fact that unlike most of these countries, Malaysia is absolutely special in the sense that we are multiracial, multi-religion, multicultural, multi-everything. So the considerations that we need to make on demography and stuff like that is a little bit more extensive than what would be expected in some countries who don't have such a unique population.
What countries are you benchmarking yourself against?
We benchmark certain and specific issues on several countries, mostly Singapore and the UK. But we also look at countries like India and Hong Kong, Australia, Germany, and even Italy, because Italy has this really interesting code of marketing for celebrities, influencers, and bloggers. So we look at those as well, because a lot of these countries are a little bit, not a little bit, they are a little bit more advanced in addressing these issues. The UK has an excellent influencer guide, for example, which we take into as well. So what we do at the Content Forum is we don't want to be that kind of organization that cuts and pastes things and just, you know, adapts immediately to whatever is already done in other countries, because that's not going to work. It needs to be drafted and tailored and targeted for the Malaysian context. So that's what we are currently doing.
In the little bit of time that we have, let's talk about policy gaps. And you're in the driver's seat now, so you have that bird's eye view of the Content Forum and the Content Code. What are the main policy gaps that you're going to want to tackle in the short to medium term?
I would consider the fact, again, that society evolves and technology develops at an incredibly rapid pace for content. Decades ago, when families would be limited to watching a show on one TV in one room, they would not have predicted that their grandkids would live in a house where a variety of shows are being enjoyed by each family member at the same time on multiple devices in different rooms throughout the house. 15 years ago, we would not have predicted the influx of influencers and how they would become celebrities of our time, marketing products on social media more effectively sometimes than models on a billboard, or how a 60-second TikTok video can generate more sales than a half-hour promo show on TV. Our grandparents, who would wait for the news every day at 8 o'clock on TV, would not have predicted that we would get our news as it happens, and not just from trained journalists, but from anyone at the right place at the right time with a mobile device capable of recording photos, videos, or audio. Mm. So yes, as these things emerge and evolve, content regulation needs to adapt to fill this, to fill these policy gaps. For example, the content code way back in 2004 didn't address influencers when it initially drafted a chapter on advertisements. Mm. Neither did it consider e-commerce marketing. Mm-hmm. The content code also didn't predict that one day religion would be used as a marketing ploy. Mm. And more brands try to exploit religion and mislead consumers into purchasing their products or services. These are among the things that are being addressed in the revamped content code. We really hope to see it being put into action. And with the what we consistently say here is that the effective implementation of any content code also requires a level playing field for all players, old and new, local, international, big and small. And that is what we consistently strive for.
Mm-hmm. How is this revamp process taking place? If, for example, a listener is interested to submit their thoughts or suggestions, is there a way for them to do so?
I would definitely welcome them to do that, because currently where we are is that the working groups within the Content Forum have spent the last few months debating, sometimes heatedly with each other, and doing benchmarking exercise with our lawyers to come up with a draft. Now we are finalizing this draft. It's almost done. And what happens then is that it will be open for public consultation. And what my plan is to have that public consultation as massive as possible to bring in as much comments as we can get, and at least have two town halls, which I foresee we would have to make it a virtual town hall, targeting those who are affected by the content code, whether it be content creators or content consumers. And I would definitely welcome you, BFM, as well, to join in checking out the draft and telling us where we could improve or areas we may have missed.
All right, Madiha, it looks like we're going to have to line up another conversation once that draft comes out. And thank you so much for speaking with me today. Yeah. I've been speaking to Madiha Mahmood, Executive Director of the Malaysian Communication and Multimedia Content Forum. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, and after that, the Enterprise team takes you through the rest of the morning. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.